parallel paradox. Call it the doxolil.
Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shit coins. Hot damn, I'm up 20 bands. Less is once again like my account's at an all-time high. When big bulls are, make bearers die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price is gon' fly away. Today, I pray. Got my bags packed, do you wish you had that? Try to tell the normies they ain't listen, how they sad. Big BTC, lil bro E, GRT. I've been telling how to grab that. Bought link, I ain't even do no research. Carry round bags so heavy that my knees hurt. Please sir, this is for my family. I've been buying daily for prosperity. Okay, you got your suicide stack all in Bitcoin. I don't need no cash. Fuck cock bucks, they suck. I don't wanna pay stub. You can keep the cash, I'ma stack until that day come. Lambo, moonshot, I believe since day one. Elon finna pump this shit to Mars, no need to say none. If you been on the sidelines, I'ma win, it's my time. Jumping on you fast, here hold my legs and watch them decline. Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shit coins. Hot damn, I'm up 20 bands. Lessons once again, like my account's at an all-time high. When big bull taught and bearers die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price is gon' fly away. Today, I pray. Shout out all the homies who just stack and stack. Mighty Bent, Battle Dell, Mr. Swan and Max. Every fellow OG, RCT, Boom Dart, R&R, Loops, and Kobe. If you don't know me, this is wrong hands only. Have fun staying poor if you capitulate, homie. I could never do that, hardly ever go flat. Small team won't do full send if a ham can. I'm long with a whole stack, I'm Giga Brain Bull Chat. Okay, here's what happened before the IRS mad. I went full bull tart and the bearers died. It sounds tall tales, but it's no lie. See, I lost all my money in the exchange hack and the boating accident that happened after that. Plus, I'm down a couple racks from when I bought Z cash. It's okay, I'll write it off, whatever helps the tax, yeah. Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shit coins. Hot damn, another 20 bands. Blessings once again, like my account's at an all-time high. When big bull taught, make bearers die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price went and flew away. But that was yesterday.
Good morning, everybody, and I hope that song got you pumped up like it did for me. We have a new all-time high in Bitcoin price today. It's trading right now at about $94,000, so absolutely crazy to wake up to that. But my name is Coleman. I am your host, and this is episode 66 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, and I want to say good morning to everybody who's tuning in. I see Death and Bitcoin out there. Chivas, 256, BTC Hard Charger, Eric, Beached Whale, BitCat, good morning, and good morning to everybody up here on the panel. Bob Van Kirk, Yomar, AC, how are y'all doing?
Good morning, Coleman. It's always a great day when we're in price discovery mode.
Yeah, it's always fun to wake up to it. I think there's some people out there that are really trying to suppress the price, and we'll get into that, but I don't think they're going to have a lot of luck with it. So I'm really looking forward to today's space, and we just got a lot to cover. So while everyone's still refilling their coffee, or getting their bone broth topped off, or if you're just over on the West Coast and you're just getting all that gunk out of your eyes, I want to make sure everyone understands the reason why we do this every weekday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. And that's to show the world what decentralized currency, what it means for freedom and what we can do. And there is no better way to show the power of Bitcoin and this group, the Bitcoin veterans, than recently we just had our guys, Shane Hazel, Mike Hobart, and Jordan Gambrell join Guy Swan's Bitcoin Audible podcast. They did it a couple days ago, and they recap what we have done with Operation Gabriel in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. And I put the link, actually I didn't throw that link up there. I'll throw that link up there right now. And if you haven't had a chance after this show, definitely go ahead and tune into that. It was a great recap of what we did during Hurricane Helene and our efforts to go ahead and help everybody. And it was really good to hear the specific details and how Bitcoin was able to allow us, through your generosity, to go ahead and accomplish what we did out there by providing communications to people who had no idea what was going on for several days or even a week, to making connections with the local authorities, finding other like-minded veterans, such as ourselves, the Christian Rangers, and linking up with them. And again, getting everybody on board and just showing the impact and how we can become sovereign. We don't need government approval with this, with Bitcoin. And so again, if you haven't listened to it, I'll throw it up there, but I haven't been more bullish about Bitcoin for a really long time, and I am so proud to be a part of this group. And so I want to thank all of you all for your help and your support and your generosity. We raised over $115,000. We utilized about $35,000 of that, but because we converted everything that was fiat back into Bitcoin with the price appreciation, we're almost right back up to that $115,000 amount. So again, it's absolutely crazy, and I can't say thank you enough for everybody that's tuned in or that helped us with this mission. So again, huge thank you with that. Having a little bit of technical issues bringing some people up on the stage, so bear with me with that. But AC, I know you're a big MicroStrategy bull. Do you want to cover any of the news that kind of broke over the last you could say 12 hours with MicroStrategy, their updated bond offering, and just some of the speeches that Saylor's giving?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. It seems like so many things are changing so quickly with MicroStrategy. I think the big one you were alluding to was the latest convertible notes offering that was just oversubscribed at nearly $1 billion. So it went from $1.7 billion to, Saylor announced earlier this morning, at $2.6 billion. So we don't know necessarily who the buyers are, but it is certainly an indicator that there is, you know, a massive amount of interest in getting exposure to MicroStrategy from those entities that otherwise could not own the underlying asset. So I think that's huge.
So they started out with right after, again, they did a 4.6 convertible note offering over the weekend. So that was announced Monday, or a buying, sorry. They bought $4.6 billion on Monday morning, and then Monday night they came out and said they're going to do this $1.75 billion senior convertible note offering. And then it wasn't even 24 hours later that they said it was oversubscribed, and they're bumping it up to 2.6 with a $400 million green shoe option, which just means that if there's over subscribement or over demand for it, that they'll increase the bond by $400 million to bring it to an even $3 billion. To buy Bitcoin. So again, he's unstoppable. On my show notes, I wrote down Michael Saylor with just a bunch of like laughing emojis, because it's almost comical at this point of what he's able to do. Bob, do you have any comments to make on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, Michael Saylor running the money printer essentially. And you know, it's like the meme with, Powell. You know, with the, with all the cash flying out of the bazooka, it's like, but this time it's someone who's putting it all into Bitcoin. It's incredible.
Yes, and he's really, and again, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because I felt like the last three shows in a row, we've really talked about is Sailor and MicroStrategy and what they're doing. But again, it's so hard not to talk about what he's doing. He has other CEOs now reaching out to him. So, Microsoft has a shareholder meeting on the 10th of December where they're going to vote if they're going to, investigate the benefits of Bitcoin being added to the balance sheet, which I think is a waste of a vote. They should just vote to whether or not they're going to add it. But during the shareholder meeting, Michael Saylor has been allotted a 3-minute speech to talk to the shareholders about the significance of adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. I think that's going to be very interesting, not for the fact that Saylor's talking, but I've never seen Michael Saylor give a short response to any question that he's been asked. So I'm more intrigued on how he's going to keep his response to 3 minutes or under. So I think that might be the biggest takeaway, that he's able to give a response in you know, less than 300 words. But it's just – go ahead, Bob.
I was just going to say two things of note. As well, as that he is going to post that publicly, the 3-minute presentation, and the, you know, then Microsoft is going to have to answer for not taking action, which I think is interesting. It's kind of a you know, something to hold them to it. And the other thing is he did offer to come and do this privately with the CEO, and they turned him down. So he gave him the chance. And so I think that's a really interesting development. We'll have to see how that plays out. But who better to give this presentation than the guy who's been executing on the plan so far, and obviously look at the results.
Yes, he's now a top 100 company in market cap. The company's now officially breached over $100 billion. So again, just the growth that he's doing is crazy. The Rumble CEO, Chris Pavlovsky, he did a Twitter poll and he asked if they should add Bitcoin to their balance sheet. And immediately, so the poll was overwhelmingly yes, they should add it. But immediately Saylor got on there and said, would you like me to come and talk to you about it? And Chris reached out to him and said, I'm going to DM you immediately and they're going to have conversations. So again, the snowball effect, you're seeing more of these companies add Bitcoin just because they're seeing what is possible with it. And then the last thing I want to just touch on is MicroStrategy was the third most traded stock yesterday. It was only outdone by Tesla and Nvidia. So again, just massive amounts of volume coming through. I'm going to pull up the chart really quick on MicroStrategy. They had a high today of $486 per share. It's dropped a little bit down to 466, but again, they only broke 400, not even 36 hours ago. So again, just absolutely crazy. AC, Eomar, Bob, do you guys have any other comments you want to talk about on Saylor and MicroStrategy?
Yeah, sure, Coleman, I'll add one more. Starting to see some screenshots from folks that were over on Reddit in Wall Street Bets, and it looks like some of the mania has kind of spilled over there. So expectation for me, at least, is increased volatility as some of the degen traders enter the space and kind of ape in. Some of the screenshots I saw were just, you know, from somebody who was a little more conservative like me. They were aping in six figures for call options that expire in 2 days on Friday. So expectation that we're going to see a lot of volatility over the next couple of weeks and possibly months.
Yeah, and that's a good point, AC. And some of the ones I saw were people, again, not understanding what he's doing and what he's capable of, shorting him, like massive amounts. And so again, these people are just going to get wrecked. So I feel really bad for him. But you're right. There's just this new wave that's going to come through and it's only going to get stronger.
I just want to point out, like, the net positive it is for him to be out there, reaching out to other CEOs. You know, so we talked, I think, yesterday about, like, you know, whether it's a good vehicle for investment or not. And there's a lot of debate there, but I think overall, you know, what Saylor's doing, I think, is a net positive for Bitcoin because it's getting it out there to these other companies. And we've talked about how, a lot of things are difficult, like in terms of, I think we talked about insurance one time a few weeks ago and how it, like, it's kind of difficult for some of these companies because Bitcoin's kind of new. But as these, and one of the things we pointed out was like, as these larger companies get involved with Bitcoin, these like facilitator, like business facilitator companies will have to kind of adapt, to that business. So Saylor getting out there and, you know, spreading the word about Bitcoin to, other companies is just going to help that adoption and move the industry forward. So I think it's a big net positive.
Coleman, I know you don't want to, keep on with the subject, and maybe AC, you have one more thing to chime in with. I just wanted to bring up the fact that, like, MicroStrategy and Bitcoin have really decoupled now from the traditional markets. If you look, basically, Dow Jones, S&P are a little bit down today. NASDAQ, Russell, everything's kind of down a little bit. Last couple of days have been pretty flat, and you see what MicroStrategy is doing. And so this is just, I think, part of what will drive people into this. You know, it's great to see things, interest from Wall Street Bets, but I think other people are like, what is going on over there with MicroStrategy and with Bitcoin? Because everything else is underperforming as it just sits flat or is mostly down basically this entire week.
It is interesting to see that, Bob. When we can spend more time, I just don't want to, you know, just bore the audience with the same conversations over and over again, but even though we're hitting new things. But it is very interesting to see that Bitcoin and MicroStrategy are up, just given the current events going on in the world, which we can cover on in a little bit, but just Ukraine just seems to really be escalating, their tactics, and how they're attacking Russia. But one of the things that you mentioned, Eomar, was insurance. And this was big news that broke a couple days ago. But AnchorWatch has become a Lloyd's of London cover holder. So AnchorWatch is a pioneering insurance provider specializing in Bitcoin custody and proudly announces its designation of a Lloyd's of London cover holder. This milestone solidifies AnchorWatch's position as a leader in the emerging market of insured Bitcoin custody solutions. So this company will be officially open for business as a cover holder of Lloyd's of London at December 1st of this year. And so for people who aren't familiar, Lloyd's of London is renowned for underwriting complex and innovative risk options. And so they're just, if you have something that's worth a lot of money, you normally get it in, backed or insured by Lloyd's of London. So this is big news with Saylor and the amount of Bitcoin he has. I have no idea what the premium for the insurance would be, but this would allow him to have, if something were to happen, it would allow him to have some type of insurance and contingency plan with his Bitcoin. So if y'all have thoughts on that.
Isn't, like, it's kind of funny because, I didn't hear about this, but I'm like just looking at it right now and their headline website says 0.5% annually. Pricing starts at 0.5% annually. But, like the insurance would just be like in fiat essentially, right? Like, cause, like there's no way that AnchorWatch can buy, whatever, 350,000 Bitcoin to like actually insure, Saylor's Bitcoin. And like, so like, I don't know, like, how exactly.
I think you're right, Eomar. That's exactly right. I think the thing here is that Lloyd's of London is willing to, provide insurance because of, they've assessed the risk of loss with AnchorWatch's custody, regimen. So essentially AnchorWatch has a special, I don't want to say special, but some technological advances, let's just say, I'm not going to go into details, on how to custody Bitcoin in a manner where the risk for Lloyd's of London is low enough for them to be able to provide insurance for the Bitcoin. So I think on one hand, you know, it's going to dictate how people are custodying their Bitcoin with AnchorWatch because they're going to have to use their setup. And that's going to prevent some people from working with AnchorWatch, but I do think it opens up a whole new market to those that would want to feel safer by having this insurance offering. So I think that there's, you know, it's not for everybody, but it certainly opens the market, especially like with bigger sums of money, that would be going into Bitcoin and being custodied with AnchorWatch.
Yeah. I'm just looking through their website now. So it looks like they're doing some format of, like multi-sig, to, I think better secure the, your Bitcoin. And then they have a cap, or at least an advertised cap of like 100 million aggregate per customer. So, you know, for us plebes, that's plenty fine if we were interested in that. But I don't know if, Sailor would be able to get all that he would need there. So, but it is interesting for other companies like maybe mid-size and smaller companies. They could probably feel, much more assured if they had some sort of like fiat insurance on it. So it's like to, I think what Coleman's point was, like, this is another like, you know, facilitator. So like, I'm sure like if you're uninformed about Bitcoin, you know, if you're, you know, boomer CEO somewhere, your first thing you're going to say is, oh, what if we lose the keys? What if we lose the Bitcoin or something? So if they can point to this and say, hey, for, you know, minimal fee, we can insure it. So we have fiat backup for it. That'll probably help push a lot of people that are like on the edge over the line into actually purchasing Bitcoin. So it's definitely another, good thing, I think, there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that you're going to see Lloyd's of London, create some kind of, Bitcoin custody, like on their own balance sheet. There's just no way that, that they can start insurance this without having some kind of backing to it. So that'll be the next domino to drop, is they'll hold it and then all the other insurance companies are going to see the benefit and then they'll start to fix it. And maybe that's the way that insurance companies can go ahead and kind of freeze their price increases. Cause some of the premiums on home insurance or car insurance are just going absolutely crazy. And there has to be some sort of solution. So maybe this is it.
Yeah, I could even see like another tier. You know, if I was buying insurance and somebody was like, hey, like we'll insure you in fiat for 0.5% when for, you know, 0.75% we'll insure you in Bitcoin terms. You know, a lot of us, would probably prefer that, that option. Cause it protects you against like that upward, price action of Bitcoin. So. I'm sure that'll be one of the next steps, like you said.
Coleman, maybe this was in the notes and you're going to bring this up, but, I think there's some notable other pressures on the Bitcoin supply with the options trading opening up on iBit yesterday. I don't know if you wanted to cover that.
Yeah, that was perfect, Bob. I was just actually going to first ask everybody really quick if they can go ahead, and just retweet this space and let's just get some more people in here. Just so we can, again, I truly believe that we have some of the best, coverage and some of the best speakers, in the space. And so let's make sure that we get our presence known and let's try and get that shared. But yeah, I was going to ask if you guys want to talk about the options on iBit and the volume it did. Or if you wanted to move into what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. So, whoever's up here, it's up to you guys and go ahead and just let me know and we'll cover that.
Well, I think as you look at the options opening up on iBit yesterday, the most notable thing is the fact that, you know, basically with options, you're looking at puts and calls, right? And so calls would be something you'd purchase if you expected the price to go up in the future. Puts would be the other side. And so what these market makers do is if a market is one-sided, they have to go out and hedge so that they don't lose money. And so essentially, yesterday, if you look at the data, it was 4.4 to 1 to the side of calls, meaning that most market participants for the options yesterday expect Bitcoin to be more valuable in the future. And so that's going to make it so that the market makers have to go out and acquire Bitcoin to hedge their positions so they don't lose money. And so Just trying to keep it real simple for people to kind of understand, like we could get real deep into options, but for most people, it's not a tool you'll use. For most people, you should just buy Bitcoin and hold it. But I do think you should understand that this dynamic, and as this goes on and more money comes into these options, if the sentiment stays the same, it's going to put a lot of buying pressure on Bitcoin. And we know that a supply shock will come. Just kind of to parlay that information into something else, the reason Bitcoin often will go up after the halving is because you have miners, as the price goes up, miners have to sell less and less Bitcoin in the market. And so once these supply shocks happen, because miners are profitable at certain levels and don't have to sell as much Bitcoin to cover their costs, there's just not as much available. Like, they're trying to hold on to as much of it as possible. So when you start looking at these supply and demand dynamics and the new things that are coming into the market, the new demand, I think most people would agree that are on stage that Bitcoin is going to go higher. It has nowhere to go but up. Not financial advice, but I'm just sharing with you some of the market dynamics so you can kind of get a gauge on why some people are so very bullish at this point in time.
Yeah, that was a perfect explanation, Bob. And so I threw a couple tweets up in the nest from Eric Balkunis. I probably said his name's wrong, so I do apologize, but he's with Bloomberg ETF. And the biggest thing that he took away was that there were a lot of calls that were calling for the price of IBIT to double by December 20th. So there, a lot of people are thinking there's going to be a massive influx in the price of Bitcoin over the next 30 days. And so that was kind of a big takeaway to call from it. I don't think if the price of IBIT doubles, that necessarily means the price of Bitcoin doubles. And so someone please correct me if I'm wrong with that. It's definitely bullish.
Yeah. And, you know, building upon Bob's point, one of the things that both, Eric, and I think it's Eric Balchunas, and others have said is the skew, like Bob was saying, for calls was super surprising. But not only that, the call options are going deep out of the money, and basically they're going to the far end. What is the highest amount that they can go for? And I think it was 100 call options, looking at as early as December. So like you said, Coleman, the market sentiment is suggesting that there's going to be a strong move to the upside here in the near term and certainly in the long term.
So I think some of that is happening because you got to think about the noobs that are options noobs, and they're basically trying to just get exposure to the options, and they're just looking for whatever they can afford. And because they're not typically option traders, they're not coming in with a sizable like budget to deploy their strategy. They're just saying, what can I get? And typically the way that works is you pull up the different prices that you can get at the different terms. And you see the list, you see, you know, like all of the numbers where you can or can't afford, whether it's in the money or out. And what do? You go all the way down until you see the number that fits what you can trade. And unfortunately, that creates a situation whereby people are doing trades that are simply never going to make money. If they're lucky, they'll be able to capture some of the vega and get out. But the likelihood is that people are YOLOing in because they feel like they missed the boat. And instead of maybe going out and getting MSTX or MSTU, they're saying, no, I can do this myself. And the fact is, folks, like, you better have had at least a year or at least somebody that's had 5 years helping you through the initial setup. The Greeks are nothing but complicated. So please understand that it's not that simple. You can be in a position where the price is going up, but because of the volatility being higher when you got into your trade than when you thought, you can still lose. So these are super, super, super nuanced topics. And I would encourage everybody to take it slow, definitely learn, because if it works for MicroStrategies and you are able to learn about how to deploy the strategy, it will work for you. Just don't get greedy.
So Petra, I really appreciate that perspective. And maybe later in the show, you can share with everybody about your event last night. I'm sorry I missed it, but to your point, the implied price on the options from the results yesterday was a January price of around 175,000. And that just does tell you, not so much that, people expect that price, but it does reflect upon, your assertion that, there are people participating in the options in calls on IBIT that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. And I just want to reinforce that idea of, that to me, at least, cause I am not a, well-schooled. I've read some books, but I'm not that well-schooled with options and stuff. I always look at it just gambling. You know what I mean? So like I'll throw some money in options, but only money that I completely write off. Like, you know, in my mind, it's like, okay, I lost this money. So, but this might be fun.
I think it's healthier to look at it as insurance than gambling. Although insurance is a form of gambling. It's better to understand it that what you're doing is you're giving up upside to protect your downside.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I suppose that makes sense. But my point is like, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, then you are essentially gambling. And that's not just for options. That's for stock prices in general. You know, if you read through, I think it was the intelligent investor. I think that's, if I recall correctly, the basic argument that, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, you're better off doing, like index funds. I don't remember if that's from the intelligent investor or from Buffett himself. You know, that's my general take on, trading in general and options. You know, I just kind of,
you know, what's funny that because of that, what you're saying right there, that gambling, I wonder why I'm not seeing the same price action and strike and call action in the leaps. I would imagine that the leaps are where people are going to go nuts, but the leaps are actually pretty normal. So I wonder really if it's just that we have so many noobs in the options games that they don't even know what leaps are.
Yeah, it could be. And like you said though, I think you were spot on with like the, what do like the Wall Street bettors have available to them? You know, when you get to leaps, the price of them is, usually pretty high. So like if I look out to like 2026, for the highest one I'm seeing right now is like $66 for IBIT. And it's, the asking price is $16.40. So that's a pretty heavy ask for somebody to just kind of, you know, to your point, doesn't really know what they're doing to throw money at. Versus like if you look at December, which is the next the earliest available one, you know, $66, the ask price is $1.25. So, you know, a lot of people can come up with $125, but they might not be able to come up with, you know, $1,600.
So for the benefit of the room, can you explain a little bit between calls and leaps so that people have a little bit of an understanding of why you would want to do one versus the other in this case?
I forget the actual timeline, but leaps are generally further out. So calls would be like your shorter term next few months. And then leaps are like your further out options. They function the same. It's just that somebody mentioned the Greeks before. So like the Greeks, I think are different. Again, that's way out of my wheelhouse. I'm just a gambling man here. The leaps are the things that are like much further out, than your standard call options. And that's why the price is so much higher for them because it's a lot harder to predict what something will do, further out, than it is like next week. You know, you have a band of probability for next week that's a lot narrower than the band of probability for, you know, 500 days from now. So.
Yeah, I think, so leaps, Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think those are, further out than 12 months. And I posted, Jeff Park's, thread from last night, kind of deep diving into the IBIT options. And under number six, this is to your point, BitPetro, that he's got it listed there at 41% of the put call ratio was at the 20 December. And then only about 6-7% are January 26 and January 27, which would be LEAPS. And I forget the acronym, but it's like long dated exposure. And when you are buying longer dated options, you're paying a higher premium for less theta decay over time. So you're paying for that optionality over the course of 12 months or 24 months. But you're right. There's a strong tendency, nearly 50%, to those expirations in December of 20. And then, you know, another 30% with an expiration of January. And then it trickles down from there.
Did you guys want to talk any more about the options on IBIT?
I think for the benefit of the audience, it probably doesn't make sense to go much deeper. I will say, breaking news, Bitcoin has reached a new all-time high again, just under 94,900, just for the benefit of the audience.
And I'm just going to take this opportunity. If you do feel like gambling, but you don't understand options, you can buy from Solo Satoshi and do some solo mining to try your odds at finding a block.
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually had Solo Satoshi on the Bitcoin Veterans video podcast last night. Personally, I was busy last night, so I didn't get a chance to watch it. But I'm going to tune into that a little bit later today when I have some free time. But I threw a link up in the nest. Make sure you go check that out and check out Solo Satoshi at solosatoshi.com. I want to give a thank you to some of our other partners. Go ahead and Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Paladin Tower Tactics. Firearm training at paladintowertactics.com. And Punchplate. Stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. And don't forget to clear your calendars for the first week of July. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. Get there early. Come in the 1st or 2nd of July. Participate in some of the pre-event parties and events. We're going to have a cruise up Tracy Fjord. It'd be part of the Bitcoin Veterans 4th of July parade and watch the fireworks. And so it's going to be a great event. It is family friendly. So bring your kids, bring your wife or husband, and make sure you join us there. We have Lisa Huff. She's out in the audience. She's going to be one of the guest speakers. And there's some other good speakers lined up as well. So make sure you get your tickets and your lodging. Just click on, the link up in the nest or visit them at bitcoinalaska.org. So we're going to go ahead and move on a little bit just because some of that option stuff was, well, all of that option stuff was way over my wheelhouse. And so I want to just kind of bring it back down into my level. And so I think something that's worthy to mention is the country of Bhutan has mined over $1 billion worth of Bitcoin just using its previously stranded hydropower resources. So to put this in perspective, last year, Bhutan's GDP was $2.98 billion. So they almost have a third, a little bit more than a third of their GDP is in Bitcoin, which is just absolutely crazy. And so when I'm looking at the charts right now and I'm looking at some of the miners and Bob and AC, maybe you guys can give me a little bit more insight on this. I don't know if the miners are going to be a big play anymore, in terms of as an investment. When I'm looking at MicroStrategy and what it's doing, like it's at $4.95 right now. It's about to break $500 a share. The Iron Riot, Marathon, they're all been pretty flat for the year. And so, I'd like to get some of your thoughts on this. Again, I'm not saying that the mining is bad. I'm very pro mining. I think the miners are crucial, especially if we start a Bitcoin strategic reserve. I think, the block war and the hash power is going to be a big thing. But I'm not sure it's going to be investable, and I think they're going to maybe need some subsidy or subsidizing to kind of keep it going. And so, if y'all could, I'd like to get your thoughts or inputs on that.
I mean, I think if it gets to that point, right, with like nation states competing and stuff, I think there'll be like some, I think the miners will probably either expand or maybe they can be acquired. Like if you think of like vertical integration with companies, like they, I feel like anytime I look at like personally like mining stuff, like at home, I always go down the same like loop. I start looking at it. I'm like, oh, the price of electricity is kind of high. It's like, how can I get electricity? And then I start looking at different ways to generate electricity. And it's just this loop that takes me over like a week or two of me like just looking at random different ways to produce electricity from like solar to, like micro hydro units to like, oh, like what can I buy near me that's already made? Like, can I do this? Can I do that? And I feel like this has to be like thoughts that like mining companies have. And then I think the only difference is that like there will be like a point where maybe like, these, electricity generation companies will, instead of like selling it, they'll just say like, oh, like we should be doing this. Like maybe we should be mining. And I think like this, proliferation of like Bitcoin knowledge through companies will, like from actors like, Saylor, will kind of make it more acceptable. Like right now, I think they like scoff at the idea because I think generally speaking, at least my thoughts on it are that, utility companies are kind of, boring, right? Like they're like, you don't really think of them as like risk takers and stuff like that. You know, that might be a misperception on my part, but that's how I feel about them. So they might be a little slower in moving down that path, but I think that could be like a way that it goes in the future that they kind of use it. Or, you know, I know there was a company, I think in New York that like bought an old like coal mine or something or a gas mine and, or generation plant, I mean, and they use that to, start mining Bitcoin. So, you know, I could see like the gap between miners and electricity generation, like closing and that kind of adding some opportunities for like investment and stuff like that. It kind of expands like what they're offering there maybe.
But do you guys and girls, Lisa, welcome to the stage. Do you see miners like being a good trade in the short term or even the long term right now? I just, again, like in previous cycles, they were good. It was a quick way to make a really quick ROI. But right now, I'm not sure if that's going to be a player, an option anymore. So, and I'm not saying that the miners are in any way going to go under or they're hurting for money. I think there's a price of Bitcoin goes up, it makes them more profitable, but I'm just not sure a lot of people are going to be putting a lot of money in like they did in previous cycles. So if you all want to touch on that.
Well, I think it might be less because it used to be like the only proxy you could have for Bitcoin, but now we have like the ETFs. You know, MicroStrategy obviously is kind of like a proxy for Bitcoin. So I think in that sense, they have more options now. So it could be that, you know, you'll see less, people that want Bitcoin that don't traditionally have access. Like they have other options now. So it could be, like a lesser spike than we've seen previously. But to your point, like the profitability of the miners will probably go up if Bitcoin keeps going up, and they'll be able to retain more of the Bitcoin that they're mining because they won't have to sell as much to cover their operating costs. So I don't know like the mining, I don't know what their like financials look like offhand. You know, if that looks favorable enough, you know, there'll still be opportunities there. You know, it's just as people reevaluate the company based off of Bitcoin and what's going on in the world of Bitcoin. Right now, like I think that the misplaced belief that Bitcoin could go away or something is, kind of like holds back some of the valuations of mining companies because like they think, oh, well, if Bitcoin goes down, then, you know, these guys are going to go broke. But once we get countries like buying strategic reserves and stuff, I think kind of alleviates that. And I think the future like bottoms of Bitcoin will be, you know, probably more sustainable for these miners and stuff. So that's my thoughts on it.
Well, I think if I had a choice on proxies right now, MicroStrategy versus the miners, I'd rather purchase the miners. I think in prior cycles, it's kind of taken a little bit of time for the miners to pump as the price gets higher and those valuations of the company gets readjusted. So I think it just takes a little bit more time for the miners to start going. And I'd rather buy miners than MicroStrategy at this point.
Can I hop in just for a second? Good morning, everybody.
Lisa, good morning, and you can hop in anytime.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you had a lot in that, where you started, Coleman. You asked about, incentives, and you asked about, there was a lot in that. I would just offer this, and I am no financial analyst. Please don't take this as any sort of, investment advice, but a couple things. And I think our friend BitPetro, who's on here too, might agree with me here, but let me separate the statements. My individual statement is that all miners are not created equal, period. When we look at mining operations across the operators, they are very different. So I think it's really important if you hold mining stocks to know exactly what the operations are, and then maybe have a forward thesis on how does this continue. Right? Because it will become harder for them to go plug in. That seems to be obvious. I can't remember who was talking about the utilities, but, you know, are they figuring out mining? I know that they've all spoken to the miners. You know, Dominion's revenue, I think, was up like 3 times. I mean, their shares have just gone crazy. I don't think that's attributed to the miners, though. I think that's directly attributed to the demand that they have on their sites, through the data centers. And
I'm going to wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that miners are still price sensitive and AI HPC is not.
Yeah. So will the utilities figure this out? Yeah. I think that the miners have a place, right? They'll help load balance, but I think overall the utilities, if they have huge swaths of power, like the Google's, Amazon's, et cetera, they will pay more than what our miners can pay. Now, on the incentive side for miners, I do think that there is, a probability that the government begins to incentivize Bitcoin mining, in the United States. I think it's really important that we have mining here, for a whole bunch of reasons, but we need block space that's made in the U.S. Like we need domestic oil and natural gas and other resources. And you have so many efficiencies within the energy space that are not connected to the grid. So, you know, whether that is at some sort of a midstream asset, whether that's directly on a well pad, whether that's out on a rig in the Gulf of Mexico, right? I mean, I have made the argument to the largest private driller in the Gulf that one day you'll be mining Bitcoin. And he was very respectful, but he was like, I don't think so. Like OSHA doesn't let me install a toilet on a rig, much less a Bitcoin miner. And, you know, I said, okay, fine. But like, I think that you'll pull up a drill ship next to it and you will run natural gas to the drill ship versus you putting it in a pipeline and shipping it back to shore and getting Henry Hub pricing, which, you know, today, it's like $2.25 or something. And I was just chatting with Dan Morrison, who gave me the statistic that, you know, hash price is up, I guess, and kind of the mining correlation for natural gas today on a 100 terahash machine is $7 an MCF. So if I'm the driller, do I want to sell into $2.25 pipeline pricing, or do I want to sell to a Bitcoin miner and achieve $7 for my natural resource? Okay, so that's the economic decision. But when this becomes a matter of national security, which I believe that it already is, it's just a conversation we're not having frequently enough. Of course the government's going to approve that we mine on drill ships or rigs or oil pads or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it just is not. This is still so new, the whole conversation around national security, block space, the underpinning of the, you know, future information transfer system. I mean, obviously we all see Bitcoin as the first use case for the network, but I mean, I believe that there will be many other use cases and we need to, you know, grow it here, protect it, preserve it, and help it thrive. And I just don't see So circling back to the miners, I just don't see how the miners that are on grid stay as competitive as those that can go seek alternative sources and really help firm up alternative or firm up existing energy infrastructure, whether that's operators, you know, exploration guys, et cetera. Like when the miners benefit, the energy companies benefit, right? It's a complete win.
Lisa, I want to pull on something there. Cause I've been following, Senator Lummis, and reading a lot of her tweets just because she's a big proponent or, and trying to push the strategic Bitcoin reserve. And I've been specifically trying to find where she is talking not only about acquiring Bitcoin, but acquiring block space and increasing the miners in the United States. And I haven't found anything. And she just posted a 5-step plan this morning about the strategic Bitcoin reserve and how we can accomplish it. But not one item on her list addressed increasing the miners in the United States. Do you think that anybody that's in power really understands the significance of controlling the block space?
You know, I'm probably, I mean, probably, certainly there's a lot of people within the Bitcoin space that understand it. There's a lot of people within Bitcoin that are influencing the future administration.
But do you think anybody in the current administration right now who's being put into power understands this, the significance of it? Because I know that there's others that are talking, but I haven't seen anybody that has like the ability to make this change talk
like,
about it. So I'm just
anybody like weakened at Bernie's administration?
No, no, like, it, so everyone that Trump's bringing up right now, like I haven't
yeah,
seen anybody
talk about
it.
I definitely think, I mean, I don't know if they do or don't, but I mean, Chris Wright, the new, head of the Department of Energy, I mean, super bright guy. This will not fall on deaf ears, right? I mean, his company, Liberty Energy, has fracked some huge number of wells. I mean, they are like very, they embrace new technology. They've been extremely successful. I don't think that this would take him probably one conversation to get it if he hasn't already. But yeah, to your point, this is just it's a new conversation. And the only way that we can protect the block space is for us to have, well, two ways. Number one, for us to have onshore hashing, right? We have to have hash rate here in the US, not necessarily onshore, but it has to be domestic. Number two, I think our foreign relations going forward are even more critical. We need to have strong foreign relationships with energy rich countries so that if, you know, our power grid gets attacked by the Chinese or whomever and everything goes down, right? The Bitcoin miners obviously connected to the grid would go down. The Bitcoin miners that are out on rigs in the Gulf would not go down. The Bitcoin miners that are on pads at natural gas well sites would not go down. So, but a significant portion of our hash rate would go down, and therefore we would need to be able to call on our friends in, you know, name oil-rich country to process our transactions. Right? We need to have alliances. I mean, the block space is the new trade route. We need to focus on foreign relations around block space. It is of critical importance.
Well, thank you for that. And so I do hope that they heed that advice and they do it. Because I do see that becoming an issue, if they don't. And again, just from what I've been seeing, I haven't seen anybody address it. So that's what's concerning for me is that they're not mentioning it. Again, it's all fun for a number go up to acquire a strategic Bitcoin reserve. But if you're not able to control, the block space, it serves you no purpose. So I just hope that message just starts getting addressed. Does anybody else have anything they want to cover on this before we start changing gears?
Maybe just some perspective on Bhutan. Their GDP is a paltry $3 billion. And just to kind of put that in perspective, I believe El Salvador is about $34 billion. So it's interesting to see these nations, very small, doing this stuff, but you know, they're very, very small. So
yes, it's an extremely small country, but they're just making a huge impact. I find that part fascinating. So we're getting to the top of the hour, but it's definitely something I want to cover. And I think it explains a lot of, the negative, you're seeing in the market right now. So for those of that aren't aware, over the weekend on Sunday evening, Biden gave Ukraine permission to use, our missiles to strike targets deep inside Russia. Putin came out, earlier, in the fall and said that that would be a red line if they allowed it. And yet for some reason, Biden gave that approval on Sunday night. As of, I believe it was Monday evening or Tuesday morning, Ukraine used those missiles to strike a couple targets in Russia. And Russia said that they would retaliate. So as of this morning, I believe what the actual events that took place was that Russia was able to infiltrate their media system into Ukraine and threw out a narrative that they were going to use a massive launch of missiles across Ukraine. So it caused havoc. A lot of the embassies, including ours in Kyiv, shut down, and we told our citizens to kind of stay home and be prepared to shelter in place. Nothing has happened from the Russian side, except that earlier this morning, the UK gave Ukraine permission as well to use their Storm Shadow cruise missiles. And Ukraine used that this morning to launch attacks on military targets in Russia. And so I think that is the reason why you're seeing some of the markets have negative for the day. But like Bob has said earlier in the show, it's very impressive that Bitcoin and MicroStrategy are staying strong during this resilience. But I just want to bring it up just to make sure everybody is prepared. I'm not trying to put fear in anybody, not trying to use a scare tactic. But it is important to kind of know what's going on. And, I guess on Monday there was a ship that was traveling, from, I think it was Finland and Germany, and they cut their cable wire for their internet and communications. And so I think Finland was trying to find the ship that cut that. And as of this morning, it looks like they did find them. And it's a Chinese ship with a Russian captain. So they're still trying to investigate what's going on. So just some news going on. I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of. And so just be on the lookout for things. And Omar, I'm not sure if you want to dive any further into this or if you can add any extra commentary to these events.
I think that's like the gist of it. You know, it's just, you know, personally, like I had, reservations about Trump, especially like after his cabinet picks, but like as like my doubt grew as I look at his cabinet picks, you know, Biden gives me the gift of reminding me why it was like the necessary choice, you know, like to lean more towards Trump. I mean, personally, I live in a state that it doesn't matter, but, you know, for the rest of the country, like I hope that they feel a little bit assured, at least like they, you know, he may not align with a lot of things, but at least he's not like trying to start a war on his way out. It's pretty crazy. Tactically, I don't see any gains that can be gained from this. Like any like strategic advantage that they're getting from this. I saw that, I think we emptied out one of our embassies or closed our embassy in Kyiv, out of fear of retaliation. And it just kind of like we're really trying to use that, like the, what I call like the human tripwires that we have stationed all around the world. We're really trying to get some of them, hurt or worse killed so that we can have a need to go into a war. You know, it's pretty terrible from the people in charge of our current administration. I don't necessarily even know if that's Biden, but it's somebody. You know, hopefully, I think I read somewhere that Trump, you know, gave a message saying that he's going to be there in a couple months. And I know I read something that said, you know, Putin is willing to negotiate with, Trump when he gets in there. So hopefully cooler heads prevail. You know, I think there's a good chance of it. So, you know, just be aware of it and, you know, make sure if you have, representatives in Congress or the Senate that are, you know, advocating for more war and stuff, make sure you reach out to them and let them know that, you'd prefer not to be in a nuclear war. I don't think we have the bunkers set up from the Fallout video game. So I think we'll do much worse than that. Those are my thoughts on it.
The thing that's most frustrating, and so thank you, Mark, for that, but the thing that's most frustrating for me is not 2 weeks ago, we couldn't get president-elect or presidential candidate Kamala Harris to shut up and get out of the media and get out of her own way. And now when we need to have somebody in authority to come and speak and kind of calm everything down, there's just radio silence. So it's just extremely frustrating. Again, I don't think Trump's the savior, for everything, but I think this is a perfect picture of that. It's a night and day difference. I have heard Trump try and talk down the rhetoric. I haven't heard anything from Biden. I haven't heard anything from Harris. So again, it's just frustrating from that, but I don't want to end this go ahead.
I just want to say, I saw a tweet that captured it pretty well. Like Trump's not necessarily anti-war, but he's anti-World War III. And I think that sums it up pretty good.
Yeah, that's a really good way to sum that up. And I don't want to end this show in a negative or a doomer aspect. So again, I just want to kind of end this on a positive when I send you off, for today. So again, look at the bright side. Bitcoin is trading just underneath $95,000, which is absolutely insane. Everyone is going to start getting those conversations. Thanksgiving is a little over a week away. You're going to have family members when you're at your family reunions or the meetings or the table, and you're going to get asked. So just remember that to have patience. I know it's frustrating. It was so much easier for people to buy in 2 years ago when you told them to. But just like you probably didn't buy it the first time you heard it. So just have that patience with everybody and just make sure you point them in the right direction. Set them up for success. Don't let them go out there and find the information on their own, because there is a lot of bad information out there. So make sure you steer them to the correct exchanges. Personally, I always direct people to River and Strike. Those are my go-tos. But also send them to the right spaces. And what I mean by that is ours. We do this every single day, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. There's not a better place that you can point people. We have Positive Alpha. We're pointing people in the right direction, and we call out the BS. So again, it's just a great, we're on Spotify, we're on Fountain. Go ahead and have them listen to past episodes that we have done. And this way we can get them on track. But if everybody on the panel has anything they'd like to add to that, I'd like to hear. Otherwise, we'll wrap up the show.
It's a great closing, Coleman.
Well, thank you, Bob. And I want to thank everybody else who joined us today. So EMR, Lisa, Texas Toast, BitPetro, AC, and everybody out in the audience. It really does mean a lot for me that you're tuning in consistently. And I thank everybody who went through and retweeted the link to the show. Again, we're going to be here tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Over the next couple of weeks, we have some fantastic speakers that are going to be with us. We have Natalie Brunel joining us on December 6th. We have Dennis Porter joining us on December 2nd. We're going to have the guys from MSRT North. We're going to have Ben Workman, Adrian, and Daniel Lewis joining us on December 10th. And Caitlin Long of Custodia Bank will be joining us as well in December. We're just finalizing the date. So we got some big guests coming in over the next couple of weeks. So make sure that we keep spreading this space. But go out there, have a fantastic day today, and don't shitcoin. It's like buying a lottery ticket with yesterday's numbers.